Okay, I'm here in the studio live, well, not exactly live, over the phone with James Westbrook Jr., who was in the group The Five Wagers. James, can you hear me?
Yes, I can hear you, Bob.
Okay, great. the first hurdle is getting over the phone connection, so it's working, so we could start.
All right.
So introducing the group, I guess. You guys had your big hit in the mid-70s with Come and Ask Me, which was a big hit in Chicago, right?
Yes, that's correct.
But you had a lot of records before that.
Yes, we had quite a few records. Some of them was played in over the air, and some of them wasn't played, you know, as it is in the music business.
Yeah, like a lot of people, like they'll cut a good record, but they can't get distribution or they can't get the DJs to play them. So, yeah, that's one of the things I try to do on the show. Like a lot of groups had good records but couldn't get them played by the DJs, so I try to sort of give groups exposure. And I know you guys had a lot of good records that some got played and some didn't get played, so.
Yes, that's correct.
So I thought we would sort of do the interview chronologically, like going through the songs. So, and in between the songs, talk about, like give more background and history of the group. So actually Come and Ask Me would be the last song to play because it's actually the last record you released.
Yes, that sounds good to me.
So actually, before I play any records, I was wondering if you could give the names of the members of the group and the parts they sang.
Okay. Well, I would like to start off with Lee Henry Brown. He was the green man of the group. That's because he wore green all the time.
Okay.
And he's the only member in the group right now that's deceased.
Okay.
And there was Larry Dobson. He was the baritone singer of the group, and he's living in California right now. And then there's Larry McSwain. He was the tenor of the group. And he's, from my understanding, he's staying in Atlanta, Georgia. And that was David Robeson, which was the bass singer. And he's living right now in Chicago. And then there's myself, James Westbrook, Jr. And I'm living in California. And that was the Five Wagers.
Oh, okay. And you guys are from the west side, right?
We're from the west side of Chicago, yes.
Okay. I think we'll talk more about sort of your background after this song. Your first three records are very obscure records, like in that they didn't really get a lot of play.
No, they didn't hardly get any play at all.
Yeah, like I don't even have these records, and a lot of collectors don't even know about these first three records. Your first record was released on a label called Toy, that's T-O-I, and it's actually a cover of, although I was talking to you and I was surprised you didn't know the other version, but it's a cover of the group The Vows, When a Boy Loves a Girl.
Yes, you told me that earlier today, and I never knew that another group had recorded that song. So, yes, we did. That was our first release on Toy Records, and it was produced by Bob Lee.
Okay, yeah, I'll play their version later in the song, but they were from the West Side, too, so however it got hooked up, it probably there was some person connecting you guys.
Yes, I'm sure it was.
Okay, well, this is your first record, and I'm playing it right now, and then we'll talk more. This is The Five Wagers with When a Boy Loves a Girl.
All right.
I was worried that the technical thing wouldn't be working totally.
So it's working okay?
Yeah, I think it sounded good.
Okay, good.
It's really nice too, actually.
Oh, it does?
Yeah, it came out earlier. I think I'll play it in a couple of songs so people can compare.
Yeah, okay. Well, I have the record that I sent now.
You know that I
Okay, I'm back on the air with James Westbrook Jr. First of all, I want to apologize that I figured out I didn't actually take him off the air until like halfway through the song. So I kind of ruined the song, and I will play it again at the end of the interview so you get like a full version of the song. Yeah, sorry about that.
That's no problem.
Anyways, so first of all, who was singing lead on that record?
The lead singer on that one was Larry Dobson, the one we called Tim. He was our baritone lead.
Okay.
And he did the lead on most of the baritone tunes, so he did the lead on that one there.
Okay, so can we talk about, I guess, a little bit of background of the group? You guys were... Sorry.
Yeah, the original Wages was called the Imperial Wages.
Okay.
And that consisted of five guys, two of the five Wages, and it was three other guys named Bo, Glenn, and Carl. They was Sam Barry. They was the original Imperial Wages. And myself, the Green Man, Willie Brown, Charles Shoemaker, and Carl Bradshaw, we were the Deltas at that time.
Okay.
And back in those days, you know how it is when the guys kind of be messing up in the groups and stuff, and some of the guys in their group was messing up, and some of the guys in our group was messing up as far as coming to rehearsals and hanging out with the girls and not showing up. So myself, I started hanging out with Doc and Mac, and I met them, and I was still singing with the Deltas. So they were talking about getting rid of a couple of their guys, and myself and Green Man, we was real close. We all went to church together. So myself and Green, we went and we talked to Doc and Mac. And Doc and Mac decided they was going to get rid of Glenn and Bo out of the Imperial Wages, so we decided to leave the Deltas and join that group. So at the time, the Imperial Wages was Sam, Doc, Mac, myself, and Green Man. So we left the Deltas, and that's how the group, the Wages, got started. So we got rid of the name Imperial, and we started calling ourselves the Five Wages.
Okay, and you guys were all from Marshall High School, right?
Well, they all went to Marshall High School. Myself, I went to Cregear.
Okay.
I went to Cregear Vocational High School, but I was at Marshall all the time. All the rest of the group went to Marshall High School.
So,
and that's where a lot of groups were formed and a lot of groups were singing. And they used to have jamborees on Friday nights where they would have a lot of groups come up and sing and everyone would buy tickets and that's the way a lot of the groups and things got started at Marshall High School.
So, like, what was the time, like, were you, like, what year were you in school when you were in the group?
Well, it was in the 60s. It was anywhere, I graduated from high school in 1968, and all the group was at my graduation. So it was pretty much between 66 and 68, the time that the groups were being formed.
So like your sophomore year?
Yes, around my sophomore year, yes, around that time.
Okay, we'll talk a little bit more about it after the second song.
All right.
And hopefully I won't leave you on the air and talk to you over the song again.
All right.
This next song I'm going to play is the B-side of your first record. This is called East and West I Go. And can you talk about like what this song is about? Because I can't tell.
Well, this song, and a matter of fact, this is a song that I did the lead on.
Okay.
East and West is about a guy that travels all the time. And he's looking for someone to kind of be with, you know. He's saying East and West, and he's looking for someone to kind of settle down, and he's tired of being alone and different stuff like that. So he's looking for someone to bring home and someone to have with him all the time.
Oh, okay, so I'll play the song without us talking over it, and then we'll talk more about the background of the group.
All right.
Okay, here it goes. Okay, I'm back here with James Westbrook, who was in the group The Five Wagers. We're doing an interview talking about the history of the group. James, you're there, right?
Yes, I'm still here.
Okay, I was worried about after I messed up the first time. Anyways, that was the only release you had on that label. And
on that label, yes, Toy Records, yes.
And then the next record you released was actually the first release on Clarence Johnson's Red Balloon label.
Mm-hmm.
That label, he also put out the group The Legends, the group who did Gotta Let You Go, and Something You Remember You By.
Yes,
but your record was actually the first record on the label, but that record is so obscure, like I don't own it or have a recording of it. I know someone who has it, but I couldn't get it in time for the interview, so it's too bad that it's not like totally complete, that we can't play every record you did. But after that, you then went on to Salem Records, right?
Yes, we went on to Salem Records with Bobby Robinson and Ruth Moore.
Oh, okay. They were your manager you were talking about?
Ruth Moore was our manager. Bobby Robinson, he was one of the producers at Salem Records.
Oh, okay. And that label, people might know, Bobby Rush is probably the most famous act on that label.
Yes, he was on that label too also, right.
So before actually I play that record, I thought we could still talk a little bit more about sort of your group and sort of how you formed. You were talking about your sophomore year of high school, you were probably getting together with the final version of the group. But when did you guys actually sort of start harmonizing or start trying to,
Well, It was right around that time we finally put the group together, and at that time we called it the Basement, and we figured it was time for us to go to the Basement.
Okay.
And that's where you do all your rehearsing and you put your harmonies together and you do everything you have to do. So we did that for a little while with the members that we had, but we started having trouble with one of the guys in the group, Sam Barrett. His father was a preacher. And he didn't want him to actually be in a group. So at rehearsals, he would miss rehearsals and different things like that. So we used to have to go to his house, and we used to have to beg his father if he can come to rehearsal. And sometimes he could, and sometimes he couldn't. So we had to make a decision whether we wanted to keep him in the group or not. So we decided that we was going to let him go, and we had to find somebody to replace him because we needed guys that was going to be at rehearsal all the time. So there was another group that was running around in Chicago singing, and the name of that group was the Entitons.
Okay, there were another group at your school.
They had a lead singer that we was looking at. Matter of fact, we was going to him to be the tenor lead, and his name was Larry Dobson. He ended up being the baritone. So one night we all got together, and we went to his house, and we knocked on his door. And he had known about the Five Wages because he went to Marshall also.
Okay.
So we went to his house and we asked him, did he want to join the group? And right away he said yes, he wanted to join the group. So from that point, Sam was out and Larry Dobson was in, and then that's when we started our serious rehearsal. So we went in the basement, and I would say we were actually in the basement for maybe a good 3 months before we actually came out and actually started singing anywhere in public. So we put all our harmonies together and we put our routines together. And then we started going out looking for other groups, you know, because back then groups used to go to the lunchroom at the schools and walk up and down the street and sing, and that's exactly what we did. You know, we came out the basement, we felt we was ready, and we felt it was time for people to know who we were. So we used to come to Marshall and around lunchtime, and groups would be standing around singing and everybody would be all gathered around listening at the group singing and stuff. So we would quietly walk in, go sit on the other side, and we would sit there and we would just start singing nice and soft and everything, and people would start paying attention. And before you know it, you know, we'd be took the crowd from the other group and it was all over there watching us sing, you know.
So you'd be like battling the groups.
Yeah, well, it was like a battle, but it was a non-battle. You know, you would just compete against groups just because they were there, you know. And then we used to walk up and down the street and just sing, and we used to have people following us up and down the street, and we would go to other groups where they rehearsed at, and we would go there to blow them out. That was our purpose, you know. We was trying to let people know that we were there, you know. And that's what we did before we actually started singing in nightclubs, you know. That was actually putting our stuff together and making sure it was tight enough to compete with the other groups, because there was a lot of groups. So we was making sure we was ready, and once we realized we were ready, we was out there, and we was ready to roll, you know.
Yeah, so going back to what I was trying to find out, I'm trying to find out, like, what got you started doing that? Was it just you saw all these other people harmonizing, and you're like, you know, we could do that too? Or were there songs on the radio, and you're like, I want to make music like that? Like, how did...
You know, it really started off for myself and some of the other guys. We were all in church together.
Okay.
And we all sung in the choir.
Okay.
So that's where it started from. It started in the church, and I know you hear that a lot, but that's really where it originally starts, in the church. And we was all in the choir, and then after we would get out of church, you know, a few of the guys get together, and we was harmonizing. And there was a lot of different songs back then, you know, like When the Morning Comes and different songs like that with a lot of harmony, you know, Standing on Guard and songs like that that guys was really singing and harmonizing. And those were the type of songs we were singing because they really had a lot of harmony, you know. So we started singing songs like that, and that's, once you start singing and getting that harmony and stuff like that, you know, it kind of gets in you. And back in those days, there was a lot of songs out with a lot of harmony. So that was our inspiration to get started, to really get us going.
Yeah, that's funny, actually. Where other groups I've talked to, a lot of them always said In the Morning was one of the songs that they...
Morning, it really was a great song. I don't know if a lot of people are really familiar with it. But
yeah, actually, I interviewed Melvin Mason, who was the lead of the Marvelos on this show, actually.
Right.
So
right.
And yeah, I'm sure people in Chicago still know that song.
Yeah, well, that was one of the first songs we used to do. And funny about that is that there used to be a bowling alley up on Madison.
Okay.
And we used to go to that bowling alley because we used to go to the bathroom. And because of the echo that you would get, we would go in there, and that's where we did a lot of practicing at in there, because it sounds so good in that bathroom that we stayed in there most of the time, you know. And the people that ran it, they never did kick us out or anything. They used to enjoy it because we wasn't harming anything. We were just in there singing. And a lot of guys used to go to the bathroom when we were there. You know?
What if they just wanted to use the bathroom?
that was good. You know.
So okay. So before we talk more, I'll play your next record. This is the first record you released on the Salem label, and this one actually still. I think your second record got some more play. But this one actually didn't get much play either. This one is Too Far Gone to Turn Around.
Too Far Gone to Turn Around, and the lead singer on that one is Larry Maxwell.
Okay, here it goes. Okay, I'm back on the air here with James Westbrook, who was in the Five Wagers. That song was just Too Far Gone to Turn Around, which was the first record they released on the Salem label in Chicago. The B-side of that was actually a Temptation-sounding song, right?
Yes.
Yeah, it was called Sad and Lonely Man.
Sad and Lonely Man, yes.
Which I think I'll play that, like, as a funkier kind of song. I'll play that near the end of the interview because... You were talking about the group you were in, the other group you were in, the Deltas.
Yes, the Deltas.
And they eventually released another sort of Temptation-sounding record. And you were talking about how you and them would sort of do, like, there would be like a battle on the radio of the different records.
Yes, well, we did a lot of battles with the Deltas because the Deltas was one of the other top groups in Chicago. And after we had got out the Deltas, they reformed and... they had a group, and it was a pretty good group also, and that group was one of the groups that really kind of kept the Thigh Waiters on our toes, because they was always coming at us, and they did a lot of choreography, and they had harmony. It was also a five-man group also. So.
And there was the cap.
You know, they were out there just like we were out there.
Were they bitter that you dissed them and left the group?
Pardon me?
You left the group, right? So they were also, there was that competition there too, right?
Yeah, it was competition because we had left the group and they got other members, and they carried the name on, and they did a good job, you know.
Was it like friendly competition?
Yeah, it was friendly competition.
Okay.
We was all friends. You know, Ron Renthrow, Willie Brown, Mac Minor, Carl Bradshaw, and Bryce. They were the Deltas at that time. So most of them went to Marshall High School at the same time, and they were in on most of the jamborees and the battle of the groups. And matter of fact, Willie Brown and Lee Henry Brown were brothers.
Okay.
So one of the ones that was in our group and the ones in the Deltas were brothers. So we were all friends. We all grew up together. We was all around each other. So when we did the battles and stuff, we were still, you know, all friends, and after the shows and stuff, we would hang out together, go out and have dinner and different stuff like that. So it was a lot of fun competing against each other.
Okay, so I think next I'll play the first record, the next Salem record you had, which was sort of the first record that I think got airplay, really. Lucky I Found You.
Okay.
And we'll talk more about the two groups. And I think at the end of the show, I'll play the Deltas record, and I'll play, which is like a funkier Temptation-sounding record also. And I'll play your record so you could see sort of at least they sound similar.
Yeah, okay.
Okay, so this next record is Lucky I Found You by the Five Wagers. Okay, I'm back on the air here with James Westbrook of the Five Wagers doing an interview today. And again, you're listening to WHBK 88.5 FM in Chicago. You're still there, right?
Yes, I'm still here.
Okay, that was just one of your first records that actually got played. That was Lucky I Found You. And I was wondering if you could talk about, like, to get played on the radio, it had to be like you had to get specific DJs to play your record, right? They wouldn't just...
Yes, to get it played, it was primarily up to the DJs whether they wanted to play it or not back in those days, you know. So we were pretty familiar with most of the DJs, and we did shows for them.
Okay.
They would have, like, their little hops and different things like that. So we would do the hops for them, and in return, they would play our records on the air, you know.
Yeah.
And WVON back in those days was one of the big stations, you know. So Herb Kent and different ones like that, they would play, and Herb Kent used to do those dance hops all the time, you know. So we would come in, and we would do guest appearances at those shows, and they would play our records pretty good.
So where were the hops? They were like at high schools, right?
Well, no, they was at they would have them like at different dance clubs, or they would have them like in they wouldn't be nightclubs.
Okay.
You know, they would be like halls. You know, they would be, now they have stepper sets, but back then we used to do what they call was the pop and different stuff like that. So they would have them like in different halls.
But there's a different audience than like you were targeting like teenagers, right?
Yeah, it was more or less like teenagers. Yes, the younger sets. But then later on, it was the older ones that we did also.
Oh, okay.
Because later on we started working in nightclubs and different stuff like that.
So what are the other DJs that that played your records? I think you were...
like Herbis Band, the Blues Man,
oh, Herbis Band, yeah.
McGee, and different ones like that.
Okay. Okay. Well then. That's interesting. Yeah, like you didn't have to pay them, but you had to do something for them.
yeah, because you know, the record companies that we was with back at that time, I'm pretty sure that they had to pay to originally get the records put on air.
Okay.
But actually, to keep them on there and to get more playing time and to keep them on the air longer is when the group actually had to go and do these certain shows and different things for them. But I'm pretty sure that the record companies had to pay to originally get the records put on air.
Oh, okay, that's interesting.
Yes.
Okay, so I'm going to play the other side of this record now.
Okay.
It's also got I Found You in the title. This one's called Until I Found You.
Yes, Until I Found You and Lucky I Found You. Those two songs were basically written by one of the best guitar players in Chicago. His name was Gregory Washington.
Okay.
And he played pretty much for all the groups in Chicago. I mean, he played for the Deltas, he played for the Five Wages, he played for the Traits, which later changed their name to the Center
Stage. Yeah.
He played for just about all the groups. He was one of the best guitar players in Chicago. Plus, he was a good writer.
Yeah, I think he wrote Someday, Someway, I think.
Yeah, he did Someday, Someway for them, right, yes.
Okay, yeah. Yeah, I think he had a couple of his own records, too, but they're like instrumental.
Yeah, instrumental, right, yes.
Yeah, that's it. So we'll talk more about, I guess, the writing of your records in a little bit.
Okay.
First, I'm going to play the B-side again, which is called Until I Found You, and it'll take a second because I got to flip the record over.
All right.
Okay, we'll be back in a second.
Okay.
Okay, we're back on the air on WHBK in the Sitting in the Park show. I'm doing an interview today with James Westbrook of the Five Wagers. Hi, how's it going?
All right.
Anyways, that was just the B-side of Lucky I Found You. That track was called Until I Found You.
Yes.
After this record was released, you went to Nation Records, which is pretty much the same label as Salem. It was owned by the same people.
Yes, it is.
And there were actually a few other Chicago records, like groups that were on Salem. Tammy Levon had a hit with A Schoolgirl's Dream on this label, and a group called Silk had a hit with Falling in Love Isn't Easy.
Yes, I'm glad you mentioned Silk, because Silk was under the same management that we were under, and that was Ruth Moore. And she had Silk before we went to her. Matter of fact, when we went and signed with Ruth Moore to be our manager, she was managing Silk, and Silk was doing like the Vegas-like thing. You know, they were already established, and it was a female group, and they were doing pretty good. They were doing like the Vegas tour and things like that, and we weren't able to do that yet because Ruth Moore said we weren't ready. So I'm glad you mentioned Silk, because they was a very, very good group.
Did you know them?
Yes, we knew them. We all rehearsed at Ruth Moore's house. They used to rehearse there all the time, and then we would come in after they rehearsed, and then we would rehearse, because she had a basement also, and that's where she had her group rehearse at, in the basement.
So in managing you guys, she did a lot more. Like she pretty much made sure you practiced and watched.
Yes, she made sure we practiced, and she made sure that we were with the record companies, and she was the one who made the deal with all the record companies, and she made the connections with them. She started off booking the gigs for us later on, and when we started off in the nightclubs, and she kind of hooked up that scene on the nightclub scene, and she made sure that we was at rehearsals and made sure that we was working and putting our stuff together. Now she pretty much let us do all the work. We made up all our own choreography, and I must say the Five Wagers, we never copied any routines from any group that was out there. We always took pride in making up our own choreography. We did our own harmonies, and we did our own background. We kind of changed things up because, you know, once we was in New York, in this story, and we had the pleasure to go and see the original Temptations.
Okay.
And they was at the Apollo. And most of the guys in the group, this was when they had the original five, and we went to the Apollo. And we seen the Temptations there, and they really motivated us. I mean, we were young, and we was acting worse than the girls that was there. We was jumping up and down, screaming, and some people was getting ready to move, and we almost jumped on top of them, trying to jump over the seats to get closer. And that really motivated us to be what we wanted to be. And we always said we didn't never wanted to be the Temptations. We always wanted it to be better than the Temptations. And that's what we worked for. They were so good to us that it made us want to be better. And that was our goal as the Five Wagers. And we were primarily known for our stepping and our harmony. So, you know, that was a story that really, really made us work as hard as we worked.
So you guys came up with all your dance moves yourselves?
Yes, yes. Myself and David Roberson, we did all the choreography. We did the choreography. And Larry Dobson in the group, he had a very good ear for harmonies. And he put the harmonies together, and I did most of the arrangements on the background, and all the guys. I mean, we all pitched in, and everybody worked extremely hard. And I must say that, you know, everybody stayed focused in the group, and we knew what we wanted to do. To be young guys, we knew what we wanted to do, and that was our goal to do it, and that's why we stayed together as long as we did as a group.
So talking about that, actually, you graduated in, like you said, 1968.
I graduated,
right?
In 1968 from Creek Hill.
So your first records were released, I think, late 60s, early 70s, and all these records are coming out sort of early to mid 70s is your last record.
Yes, yes, they were all coming out around that time.
But so did you guys sort of want to become professional musicians by the time you were all working, right?
Yes, we wanted. Yes, yes. So, well, you know, from high school. And this is kind of strange. From high school all the way through, you know, we rehearsed 5 days a week. I mean, we rehearsed every day, and that's what we had to do. We rehearsed every day, and we worked every weekend. So it was a 7-day thing for us. I mean, we would rehearse Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, and sometimes have an early rehearsal on Friday. Then we would work Friday night, Saturday night, and sometimes on Sunday.
And you had regular jobs too, right?
Well, not at that time we didn't, no.
Oh, okay.
We didn't. Now, when we was in high school and before we really started doing it, we had regular jobs. But once we really started working in the nightclubs and doing the night scene, that was our life. That was our jobs. And we made our money working in the nightclubs. Sometimes we would work two nightclubs in the same weekend.
Oh, okay. So, yeah, I didn't realize that you were actually professionally doing it right out of school.
Yeah, we around that time, we started working in the nightclubs. And even though we lived on the west side, most of the nightclubs we were working were on the south side.
Oh, okay.
So we actually had went from the west side to the south side.
Oh, okay. I think after I play this song, we could talk more about the clubs you performed at and the artists you performed with.
Okay, that sounds good to me.
Okay, so this next song is the record you released on Nation Records.
Nation Time Records.
Nation Time Records, and this track is called You're My World.
You're My World.
Thank you.
Okay, you're tuned to WHPK 88.5 FM in Chicago. Today I'm doing a phone interview with James Westbrook Jr., who was in the group The Five Wagers. And James, I didn't explain why I was doing a phone interview. You're actually in California now, right?
I'm actually in Sherman Oaks, California. Yes, go ahead.
Okay, so I guess near the end of the interview, we'll talk about what sort of where the group members are now.
Okay.
I guess before we were talking about like the shows you were doing and the places you played. If you could talk a little bit about the clubs you played at and the artists you played with, that would definitely be interesting, I think.
Okay, sure. Before I get into that, I'd like to just say, like, back when we were doing the shows and we was out there, a lot of people may not know me as James Westbrook because we never gave our real names back at that day. So I would like to say the names, and most people know me as Rev.
Okay.
Okay, and most people know Larry McSwain as Mac.
Okay.
And David Robeson, most people know him as Doc. Lee Henry Brown, most people know him as the Green Man. And Larry Dobson, most people know him as Tim.
Okay.
So back in those days when we were doing the clubs and stuff, no one really knew your name. They couldn't look you up in the phone book. They couldn't find out who you were because when we introduced ourselves on stage, those were called our stage names.
Okay.
And those were the only names that we used. So back in those days, getting back to the clubs that we worked in, we worked at clubs by the name of Club Motown. We worked at the Green Bunny.
Where was Club Motown?
Well, Club Motown was on the south side.
Okay.
A lot of the clubs was on Halsted and different streets on the south side of Chicago.
Okay.
The Green Bunny and the Bonanza, matter of fact, they were not too far from each other. Matter of fact, they were a matter of two or three blocks from each other. We worked at the High Chaparral. I'm pretty sure everybody's pretty familiar with the High Chaparral.
Yeah.
We worked at Bill Street, which was like on 63rd Street. The Sidewinder was a small club that was on the west side. That's where we pretty much started at. That was the first club that I actually seen the Jackson 5 working in. It was and back in those days, the Jackson 5 was riding around in a van, and they used to come and do shows in Chicago. That was the first club where I seen them working. Also, Maurice White of Earth, Wind, and Fire, he used to play there all the time.
Yeah, they had the Pharaohs, right? That was their group.
Uh-huh. And the Guys and Gals was one of the clubs we used to work at. The Keeman Club was also on the west side. And one of the last clubs we worked at for a long time was called That's Life, and we worked there. And a lot of the clubs, at Club Motown, we worked at Club Motown, I would say, maybe for a year straight every weekend.
So you were the act playing every weekend?
We were the main act. Also, the person that worked with us the whole time we worked there was Lil Miss Soul, and her real name was Patrice Jefferson.
Okay.
And some of the bands that we worked with was the Sons of Slums.
Okay, yeah.
Joe Miller and the Seeds of Life.
I don't know that group.
Okay, the Scott Brothers.
Okay, yeah.
You probably heard of them.
Yeah.
Intruders.
Yeah.
Brothers of the Ghetto, which were some young guys, but they were really a good band.
I think they had a funk record called The Rocking Chair or something.
They
like
did,
that.
The Brothers of the Ghetto. That's right. They played for us for quite a while. We also worked with Ben Wright and the Weapons of Peace.
Okay.
And we also worked with the High Chaparral House Band.
Oh, okay.
So when we worked at the High Chaparral, most of the time you had to work with a house band. That usually came with the territory, you know.
So when you were performing, would you like play different clubs every week, or you'd play a club for a stretch and then?
Well, you know, we played different clubs for a stretch. The Motown, we did that for a stretch. But other than that, we would be booked for 3 to 4 months. But we were also double up sometime, and we would work at some of the other clubs. Like on Saturday night, you generally close until like 5 a.m. in the morning. So we would do a first show at one club, and then we would leave and go do a first show at the other club. Because between shows, they would play dance music, and people would dance.
Oh, okay.
So we would leave and go do the first show there. So we would change uniforms. We would take a uniform with us and change. And like we wore one uniform Let's say we was at the Green Bunny. We would wear a uniform there, and then we would take a uniform with us over to, let's say we went to the Bonanza. We would take a uniform there, and we would change uniforms there, so we would be in a different uniform, and then when we come back to the first club, we would already have a different uniform on. So we kind of did that on Saturday nights at the main club. You would have to do three shows on Saturday. You do two on Friday, three on Saturday, and two on Sunday.
Oh, okay.
So we would go back and forth, and we would work. And a lot of the clubs we worked, we had a lot of fans. Some clubs, we would have lines outside, especially on Saturday night. And some of the clubs, they start emptying the clubs after the first show and bring a whole fresh crowd in for the second show. They would empty it and bring a whole fresh crowd in for the third show. So, you know, the clubs were making real good money at that time. We were doing okay, but they were the one who was really getting over. And on a lot of those shows, we were working with people like John Edwards from the Spinners.
Okay.
We opened up a couple of times for Al Green. We worked, there was another group, I don't know if you ever heard of him, called the Soul Folks.
Yeah, I don't know that group.
And we opened up for Tavares.
Okay.
And we worked with Bobby Jones, I'm pretty sure you know him.
Yeah.
And Gene Chandler, the Duke of Burrow, we worked with him. Otis Clay, we did a lot of work with Otis Clay, and I understand Otis Clay is still working in Chicago right now. There was another singer that was doing blues, Willie Mitchell.
Yeah.
I'm sure you know Lil Oscar.
Yeah.
He's been working in Chicago for a long time. And then we worked with the Emotions.
Oh, okay. And what, I wonder if you could talk about what your shows were like, too. Like, you already talked a little bit about your dancing. Like, what sorts of songs did you do? Did you do, like, lots of the hits of the day, or did you do your own originals?
Yeah, primarily we would pick a lot of songs that was being played on the radio. We would change the songs up every week because if you had a club for a long period of time, you pretty much get a lot of the same people coming back. So you can't do the same show week after week after week. So that's why we rehearsed 5 days a week. We did Temptation songs. We did Dramatic songs, Sly and the Family song, Family Stone songs. Anything that was really big on the radio, those are the songs that we would do. And a lot of songs, we would find songs. People used to send us songs that people weren't even familiar with. We would take them and we would do them on the show. And that's the way we kept people coming all the time. We would get new people, but we would also keep the same crowd coming all the time because they knew that we was going to primarily change our shows. And every show, we did a different show. So we had to do a lot of rehearsing, and that's what we did. We would do, if we was doing three shows a night, each show would be different that night. And if the next week, we may do one or two songs in a show the same that we did the last week, but we wouldn't do no more than that. So we had a wide variety of shows, and we worked hard every week. Like I said, if they had too much music in them, then we had to create and put background in it. Either we were singing or we were stepping, one or the other. It wasn't no just standing there. When we weren't singing in the background, we were stepping. And when we weren't stepping, we was coming up to the mic and harmonizing.
Oh, okay. Yeah, it's hard. Like, someone like me, the best they can imagine is, you know, what they've seen in, like, the Temptations movie or something. Like, you know, people walking back and forth, spinning around.
It all kind of sounds the same. You know, if you've seen the Temptation story, then pretty much the same type of thing was going on with the Five Wages and the other groups in Chicago. You know, we all kind of went that same trail. You know, the group, I have a funny story for you. We took a tour one time, and we went back on the Eastern Seaboard. We went to Washington, Pittsburgh, Philadelphia, Boston, and we were singing in high schools, and we were doing high schools and YMCAs back in that time.
Okay.
So we was in Pittsburgh one time, and like I said, it's five of us in the group, plus we had like three or four band members with us. So we were from Chicago, and we were young, and we wanted to walk around and look around. So we were staying at the YMCA, which wasn't a pretty good neighborhood back in Philadelphia, but we didn't know that. So we wanted to get out and look around. So we were walking around the neighborhood, and we were just walking, and we seen these girls on the porch. So they what y'all doing around here? You know, we say, well, we from Chicago. We're a singing group. We just, you know, walking around looking. She said, well, y'all better be careful because there's a lot of gangs around here, you know. So we said, well, we ain't worried about no gangs. We're a singing group. We from Chicago. You know, we can take care of ourselves. So we just walking around, and all of a sudden, we started seeing guys running like in gangways and in alleys and stuff, and they was whistling and all of that type of stuff. And we looking around, we wondering what's going on. So by the time we make it to the corner, we get surrounded. I would say from 20 to 30 guys surrounded us. And they asked us, what were we doing there? Was we a gang? And they had us around. So I was the spokesman for the group, so I told them, no, we're a singing group, and we're from Chicago, and we're singing tonight at the YMCA. And, you know, they say, well, you know, y'all got to sing for us. You know? So they had us around, so they told us that we had to sing for them. So we struck it up right there. We used to do Old Man River a cappella.
Okay.
So we stood right there on the corner, and we sung for them, you know. And I think we did two songs. We did Old Man River, and I think we used to do Ain't No Sun Since She Been Gone,
yeah.
By the Temptations.
Yeah.
And we did those two songs, and most of the guys came to the show that night, you know. And it was scary at first because they thought we was a gang, and we never looked at it because it's always at least five of us together, you know. So they had surrounded us on the corner, but pretty much every last one of those guys that was there, they came that night and they brought their girlfriends with them, and they had a good time, you know.
That's what at first they wanted to hurt you, but then they became fans.
Yeah, so it was you know, we like the Temptation story and our story, you know, I can tell you a lot of stories of things that happened with a group and the experience that you have from traveling and being on the road, but that's what makes it, you know, the type of life that you live, you know.
Okay, well, the next record you had was your biggest hit, Come and Ask Me. And I want to play the record since we've been talking for a while.
All right.
And then we can talk some more.
Okay, sure.
So I'm sure everybody will recognize this song. This is your big hit.
That was the biggest one that we had.
Yeah. With Come and Ask Me. And then
the last one that we had.
Yeah, and then we'll talk some more.
Okay.
Okay. Okay, we're back on the air on WHBK 88.5 FM in Chicago. You're listening to the City in the Park show today. I'm doing a special interview with James Westbrook, who was in the group The Five Wagers. And that song we just played, that was just your guys' biggest hit, right?
That was the biggest one that we had. Actually, when that record came out, we thought we had made it. You know, you always wait for that certain record and you always wait for that certain time. And when that one came out, we actually thought that our time had finally came, you know.
Yeah, that got a lot of play in Chicago, right?
It got a lot of play. And it was also, from my understanding, it was played in other cities, and it also done well in other cities. Now, in Chicago, at one time, I think it made it to, like, number two or something on Chicago list.
Okay.
And they played it down south in different places like that, and I heard that it did pretty good in other places where it was actually played.
Yeah, like, I know it didn't chart on, like, the Billboard charts, but, like,
well,
that doesn't...
It never went nationwide. From my understanding, is that there was a big company that wanted to take over the record and go nation with it. Yes,
Avco actually picked up the distribution, I think.
Yes,
of that record.
And I heard that the people that was running it or something didn't actually. They felt that they can do it themselves, you know. And they were only doing it, like, in spots and instead of doing it the way that it should have been done. I think if it was actually put out nationwide and the money was put behind it that should have been put behind it, I really think it had the potential to really be a big record nationwide.
Yeah, definitely. It's got a real nice sound. Like.
Yeah, it done real good in Chicago, and people, people went out and bought it in Chicago. You know, I know a lot of people that went out and bought Come and Ask Me, and that hadn't even heard of none of the other records, you know. So that was a good sign that it did good. Also, you know, the Dells had something to do with that. They were in the swing on that record when it came out also.
Like they were producers of the record?
Yeah, they were part producers of it. Jerry Aaron, Carter Russell. I think General Crook actually done the productions on it.
Yeah, he's listed as the Dells are listed as executive producer, and
right,
General Crook is the producer or something like that.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, definitely he gave it more of like a 70s type of sound.
It was my personal opinion. I think the more and more records we put out from the beginning to now, you know, I think they just kind of got better as we kind of, you know, went along. The more studio work we got, the more we came familiar, the more we came relaxed, and, you know, we was learning as we were going along, you know, from the beginning when A Boy Loves a Girl up until Come and Ask Me. I can hear a lot of progress that the group made from just being in the studio.
Yeah, and the songwriting makes a big difference too, I think.
Yes, and it all depends on the writers who wrote the song.
Like you guys could be a tight group, but if you can't get a good song, then...
It doesn't do anything. That's right. That's correct.
Yeah, so it's actually surprising. So you had Come and Ask Me, and then it was a big hit, but like what happened after that?
Well, you know, Come and Ask Me, like I said, we thought that it was going to be it. And, you know, even when Come and Ask Me was out, they had a great big party for us, and everything looked like we were on our way, you know. But that night, come midnight, they picked us up in limousines, and we was at one of the biggest hotels in Chicago, and we had a going away party and all that. So the group had decided that we wasn't doing a lot of work in nightclubs. The nightclubs was kind of dying down, and they wasn't booking like they were booking. So we had a friend out here in California named Kenneth Jones.
Okay.
He was doing some writing for Smokey Robinson.
Okay.
So we had got in touch with him, and he had said, well, come on out to California. And let's see if we can do some writing and get some records on you and see if we can get something through Smokey. So we had decided once that record didn't do what it was supposed to do, that it was time for us to move on.
Was it just like the Chicago?
In 1976.
Okay.
We decided that it was time for us to move to California. But before then, back in 1975, one of the members in the group, David Robeson, Doc, he had left the group, and he went with the Satellites.
Okay.
So he was the bass singer in the group. And, you know, for him, it was a pretty good move for him because, you know, things hadn't went the way for us that we had hoped that it would go. But for him, it was a good move. But at the time, the group didn't really see it that way. We felt like, well, he was deserting us. But he got exposure to what it was like to actually be out there with a group with some hit records, you know.
Yeah.
So right after that, it was only four of us, and we listened to some more guys that sang bass, but we had the best bass singer in Chicago, no doubt, with him. And we never did find another bass singer to replace him. So After that, it was only four members in the group. So we.
Was that before you went to before you went to California?
Yes, before we went to California, there was only four. We never did replace him back in Chicago. So we did a few shows with the four of us, which we did pretty good. We was only missing the bass singer. And after that time, I took over doing all the choreography because me and him used to do it together. You know, it kind of left a hole in our hearts because we had started out, you know, but we understood. At first we didn't, but later on we understood that he had to do what was best for him, you know.
So
after that, we did a few shows and things were slowing down in the clubs and, you know, it wasn't, the clubs wasn't happening like they were happening earlier. So we decided that it was time for us to move on. So we moved out to California. I mean, we packed up and we took off.
So the four remaining members moved to California?
The four remaining members, which was myself, Larry Dobson, Larry McSwain, and Lee Henry Brown.
Okay. So
once we got to California, we came out here and we spent, I would say, a good year. All we did was record. We weren't doing any... we weren't doing any nightclub things at all. All we were doing was record. And we recorded a lot of stuff. But none of the stuff never got put out, you know. So some of the guys got a little tired of it, and we all had to get jobs then. So once we started working, and we was working 9 to 5, and we was in the studio, some of the guys were getting tired, and, you know, things went happening the way that we had hoped to happen when we came to California. So one or two of the guys decided that they was going to go back to Chicago.
Okay.
So once they decided to go back to Chicago, the group basically kind of broke up once they went back to Chicago.
So how come you weren't able, like you did a lot of recording, but how come you couldn't release any of it?
Well, you know, we were working with basically one person. We weren't working with a lot of different people. We were working with one person, and he was doing a lot of writing, and we was kind of hoping that Smokey would take the stuff that we were doing because he was one of Smokey's songwriters. He wrote one of the songs that was on Smokey's album, and it did pretty good, but we were kind of hoping that we would get a chance to get put on a label through him, which never actually happened, you know. Smokey heard the stuff that we did. He heard a lot of different stuff, but it never came to be where the stuff was actually put out. So, you know, that's the music business. I mean, and a lot of it was good stuff. I mean, it was good music. It was good songs. And but sometimes it just don't happen for you.
Yeah, well, definitely it'd be good if the music, like, saw the light of day and actually got released sometime. Like, now there's a big, you know, reissue market, and people release stuff that never got released, and there's a whole, you know, new group of people like me, like younger people, who are sort of into the music and collecting the music. So definitely, if you could get access to some of the stuff, you should try to do something with it, I would think.
Yeah. We have a lot of stuff, and, you know, Kenny Jones, we still stay in touch with him. He owns all the stuff. He still has it. We, you know, I'm sure that, you know, he would be interested in, you know, if he had the right connections and stuff to put some of the stuff out. But, you know, right now, one of the guys in the group, from my understanding, is living in Georgia, like
okay.
I said earlier. Two of us are in California, and the other one is in Chicago, and one of the guys is deceased right now.
Okay.
So, you know, that's basically where we are at this time in our lives, you know. But we all are still in music. One of the guys that's in California, he's singing right now with Darrell Coleman and Friends, which is a band, which is doing real good. And they're singing, and they're doing a lot of work and stuff. Myself, I'm still into music. I do my own thing. I do parties, and I have a karaoke machine that I take with me, and I have people sing, and I do some singing, and I have my own, like, little DJ thing that I do the music and stuff. So I'm still into music. I just did kind of change from the group thing to my own thing.
Yeah.
So, you know, once you're in the music is going to always be there.
Yeah, definitely. Like, you know, you have a history. Like, you have these records you put out, and those are always going to be there.
Yes.
So next I'll be playing the record that was one of the B-sides of your early records. It was the one that actually sounds like The Temptations.
Yes, we all did certain individual parts in it. it was written that way, sort of like a temptation type thing where each person had a certain part in there.
Yeah, and you were telling me that Purvis Fan actually liked to play this one.
Well, Purvis Fan played this record a lot, yeah, because it's got a sort of like bluesy-like thing to it. It's got some funk to it. So he kind of took that under his wing, and he played it more than anyone else.
Okay, so this next song is The Five Wagers with Sad and Lonely Man, and we'll talk more after we get back.
All right, sure.
Okay. Okay, we're back on the air with James Westbrook, who was in The Five Wagers. That was just the B-side of one of the Salem records. That was called Sad and Lonely Man, a very Temptation-sounding record. I think it's funny, even one of the guys sounds just like Eddie Kendricks on that record.
Yeah, that was Larry McSwain, yeah.
So I guess in comparison, the next record I'm going to play is the group that you used to be in and that released this record around the same time. This was the Deltas?
Yeah, the Deltas. I think that record was out around the same time we had out You're My World.
Oh, okay. And this record is called Do What Comes Easy. So I'll play it now, and then we can talk more.
All right.
Okay, here it goes.
Oh,
Okay, we're back on the air. You're listening to the Sitting in the Park show. I'm here today with James Westbrook of the Five Wagers doing a phone interview. That song I just played was actually the Deltas, real nice sort of funky group soul, like Temptation Soul kind of sound. And that was the group that you and Lee Henry Brown were in before you were in the Five Wagers, right?
Yes, that's correct, yes.
And you were sort of in like a friendly competition with them at the time that record
came out. We were all friends. You know, we all did things together after we worked and after we did about other groups. We hung out and we all grew up together. So it was all friendly, you know. We had fun. We laughed and talked to each other. And when we had the records out at the same time, we did a lot of different gigs at different clubs together because they were playing their record and our record at the same time, and they had us doing battles of the group, and it was a lot of fun at that time.
Oh, okay, yeah. But definitely, and you were talking about how, you know, you couldn't get, like, club gigs, so you eventually moved to L.A.
Well, around that time, pretty much all the small labels was packing up, and the clubs, they wasn't so much doing the groups and stuff no more. They was really, like, going out into the, like, stepper sets and different dancing and stuff like that. So I think they were, people were putting together different clubs and giving dances and stuff, and they didn't want to hire the groups and the bands. So pretty much the bands and the groups and stuff was going other places to work and stuff. So, you know, we pretty much made our living by working in the clubs because we weren't pretty making any money on the records.
Yeah, like that's what I was talking to you on the phone about before is, that like in the mid 70s, all the sort of Chicago labels and clubs sort of were starting to die off.
Yeah.
Even though, you know, Chicago was such a source for music.
Yeah.
You know, and local labels before.
We started going to different places and down south and different stuff, doing gigs there because we weren't really getting to work anymore in Chicago. So, you know, things was kind of changing, and we recognized that it was changing. Not just for us, it was changing for pretty much all the bands and all the groups, you know.
Oh, yeah, definitely. But before the show is over, I wanted to get in sort of both versions of When a Boy Loves a Girl.
Okay.
Since I messed it up at the beginning.
Yeah.
So first I'll play your version of the song, and then I'm going to play the Vowels version of the song.
All right.
And then we could finish up the interview.
Okay.
Okay, thanks a lot, and I'll start the song now. Here
it is. All right.
Thank you. that the way it is. When a boy loves a girl, and did you know that a boy loves a
up here on the air. This is sort of the end of the Sitting in the Park show. I've been doing an interview with James Westbrook of the Five Wagers. And first of all, I want to say thanks so much for doing this interview, James.
Oh, well, you're quite welcome. I'd also like to say thank you. I would like to thank WHPK for taking the time to do the story on the Five Wagers. This meant a lot to me. I would like to say hello to all the Chicago people and hope you enjoyed the story.
Yeah, like, it's definitely, I think it's important, like, I mean, one of the things I try to do in the show is play, you know, good records that, you know, either people couldn't get played or, and then, you know, even with the fact that the records are out, you know, the stories are sort of lost history until, you know, people that try to, you know, document it or, write it down or, you know, play it on the air. So I definitely appreciate you, you know, you sort of giving a little part of the short Chicago history, like talking about the clubs and the other groups you played with and stuff.
Yes, well, it was my pleasure.
Yep. And you were even talking about how you guys didn't even make any money off of the record.
We didn't make 1 cent off of any of the records that we actually recorded. We made all of our money off of working in the club. So, you know, that's the way it was back then. And, you know, I'm just glad to have been in the group and I had a part in the whole thing. And, you know, it was great being in the group.
Yeah, definitely. And I think you should definitely try to do something with the material you have now. Because, you know, there's definitely like a new kind of different market for it. And, you know, if you actually keep the publishing and, you know, you might be able to eventually get your story out and, you know, make some money off your records.
Yes, well, it sounds good to me.
Okay, well, I hope something happens with them. And I just want to say thanks again.
Okay, and thank you, and I appreciate it.